Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking us out. If you're not already, please do hit that subscribe button. You know how this works. You get new interviews just like this one every single week. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, wherever you get your podcasts from. That's where you'll find me. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And we've given you lots of good reasons to subscribe, too. In fact, some of the guests we had lately, we talked with Moby, Michaela J. Rodriguez, and Ron Funches. You can see them in the new season of Loot on Apple TV+. Broken Social Scene, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Marty Stewart, Ian Astbury from The Cults. We had Cassandra Peterson. You know her as Elvira. She was here. Olivia Allen Lind, who's starring in Wayward on Netflix. Jeff Tweedy of Wilco. Mary Stuart Masterson, Michael Chiklis, and Rob Corddry all dropped by to talk about the movie The Senior. Willem Dafoe and Corey Hawkins were here to discuss The Man in My Basement. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today it's a special Rewind episode. We're going to look back at a couple interviews I had with some favorite bands, Kaiser Chiefs and Teenage Fan Club. My Kaiser Chiefs interview comes from 2014. Ricky Wilson, Simon Ricks, they had dropped by to talk about their comeback moment on Education, 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 and War. That was the name of that album. We got to talk about finding purpose again after lineup changes, learning not to play it safe, rediscovering the joy of being a band that still had something to say. And so that's where we're going to start. I'll tell you about my interview with Norman Blake of Teenage Fan Club here in just a bit. But starting with part one of this Rewind episode, it's Kyle Meredith with Ricky Wilson, Simon Ricks of Kaiser Chiefs.
It's nice to be back in America doing some shows again.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have you back.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was that moment there where we weren't sure that we were going to have you back.
There was a moment where we thought we weren't going to.
Yeah.
But then when it's in danger of being taken away from you, you get you start realizing how much you want it.
Yeah. Phoenix rising from the ashes.
More like a child with a toy being taken away from it.
No,
give
I want
me
it.
That. Yeah. But a phoenix rising from the
That's
ashes.
That's much more, yeah. I know, yeah. Yours is much more poetic. Sure, let's go with that one.
But yeah, it's true, and it lit a fire underneath.
Yeah. So. No, that's good. That's good, because, I mean, you're kind of such important part of the last decade musically. I mean, there was a sound and a time and a place, and if you can get latched onto that, and I guess it's kind of twofold, too. It's a double-edged sword, rather, because on one hand, you get time-stamped,
yeah,
and on the other hand, you know, but you've got to overcome that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what we've done on this record, really. I think we're in danger of being like, yeah, Abdi's Riot and Ruby and all those, the songs from that sort of time were really great. And coming back to America, it's just like, we've only done one gig so far, but it was great to sort of see the audience, and they do know, you know, they do know Abdi's Riot, and they do know Every Day Less and Less and Ruby and stuff. And sort of, you sort of, because we're not very big in America, so you sort of think that no one's ever heard of us over here. But actually, it's quite good to come back and feel like we've, you know, done a bit of, you know, there's a bit of music history here as well. But anyway, back to the point. So yeah, we felt like this, not to trade on past glories, you know what I mean? I think that's important to us, to have a career and to sort of keep writing. And so we were number one in England, and that was a really big sort of moment for us, because it's sort of, it was 7 years, was it, after our last number one.
Wow.
I think that's shows that we're sort of having ups and downs.
Also, I mean, not just being a band, but life in general is about overcoming stuff, and that's what makes a career, you know what I mean? It's the ups and downs. And you know, it's great for those guys that just have ups, but then it just explodes at the end of that. And
I know the mini bands that just have ups, though.
Yeah, well,
I mean, we've been talking a lot about, you know, friends and I.
Yeah, but you never hear them from again, because they just disappear.
But even like Dylan had a bad decade. That was a bad 10 years, you know.
Yeah, exactly. and you know, you just have to look at other people, and you have to go, so what? You know, so an album didn't necessarily stick to the wall. Mm-hmm. It's not a reason to give up. Mm-hmm. When something's broken, you fix it. You don't throw it away. So we fixed it.
You did it. Education and war. You've made it really fun for DJs like me.
I like the fact that everyone around, everybody pronounces it differently. It's only like, actually three words.
Okay.
Five words.
It's only three. It's just one of them's repeated.
All right. Yeah.
But everyone says it differently. I mean, education, education, and war.
Yeah, it's got a good. Well, that's the fact, and war.
Yeah. I mean,
it's going to have a nickname at some point.
We really shot ourselves in the foot with that, because, I mean, it's not good on Twitter either. You've got to write.
You can't hashtag that.
No, yeah. But then the thing is, this is a part of our new kind of philosophy, which was, in the past we'd shy away from doing things that we thought were had any element of risk to it.
Oh yeah.
But then you realise that that's what makes you boring, and doing stuff that you think, well, that's what we want to do, so let's do that. Yeah. And we wanted to call it that, so we go, well, let's call it that. Don't worry about, I mean, the amount of times we thought of titles, then kind of try to think about the review and how they could change it or twist it to make a pun which was negative about us, and then you kind of just go, do you know what, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. Yeah. So don't worry about, we're not writing a record for them, we're writing it for the people, we're writing it for, well, hopefully for everybody.
Yeah. But, you know. That's really interesting to hear you say that, because in not wanting to take chances, because when I hear your music, and especially when I go back to think about the first time that I heard Riot or Dancer or any of those, I mean, those were chances. Those were, you know, those weren't just like everything else. That wasn't the safe side. I mean, I think back to 2005, and we were kind of having a musical revolution. You know, I think that you guys were part of this unofficial club that was happening, but it wasn't, you know, you could have just as easily wrote the big Nickelback song, and thank God you didn't, you know, these were chances.
But yeah, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because I really don't want to be one of those people in bands that ever kind of talks about a past album like it was really bad or anything, but I do think in some ways we did take the edges off, and I don't know why we did that. It was about, I mean, we might have compromised at some point trying to do what we thought we should be doing rather than what we do naturally. And when we came back to make this record, we just, it was so much like it was just like when it was the first rehearsal.
Yeah.
It felt like it was, not in a kind of way where you go, oh yeah, it felt like it was, we're a new band again. Because everyone says that, because that's what we're supposed to say.
Right.
But it literally was a new band, because we didn't know what the hell we were doing, because we'd lost a member. And he was very important. It wasn't just, you know, like losing a drummer. It was losing the drummer.
But he was, I mean, he was a part of the last record with Medieval. And I mean, so even it seems like, regardless of how that breakup happened, it feels like everybody was a bit directionless. Like, it wasn't you versus him directionless. That album really did, I mean, as a big a fan as I am, it was even the point where I was going, I wonder what they're up to right now, you know?
We didn't really know. I mean, the reason we really wanted to make it, we wanted to carry on, and Nick was losing interest then about being in the band. And so we came up with the idea, you know, the selling it on the internet and you can choose tracks. Basically, it was a way of kind of getting him excited about it.
Right.
And because he was, I don't know if he knew what, I mean, a lot of bands lose sight of who they are and what they want to be. And I think at that point he had done that. But we've when we kind of regrouped, we realized that it's you don't have to think about it too much. Right. You just have to make noises until the ones you like are ready to go into the studio, you know?
That's a good motto right there. Yeah, I think there was the point where I saw that it was a different record in the UK than it was in America. Yeah. And you got to think, oh, something's wrong there.
It got massively, massively complicated.
It did, yeah.
I mean, it sort of seemed in keeping with the record to have a different one in America, because the whole point was that everybody's record would be different. Mm-hmm. And it was like released in America a year later and stuff. It was just, I don't know, it was a very interesting time.
I didn't even want there to be a physical record, but then there has to be a physical record. But why does there have to be a physical record nowadays? Because nowadays no one buys physical records. So it's like, it was really complicated. And even I started not being able to answer questions in interviews because I didn't know what was going on.
So you put the brakes on. You say, hey,
let's to an extent, musically, you could kind of tell what we've been listening to that morning when you every song. It was directionless. But sometimes, I mean, that's great. I think it's amazing that a band is allowed to just do an album that they don't really know what they're doing in order to find the path again, you know?
I think it was where we were at the time as well. I think the whole thing is where we were at the time, which was, I think we were a little bit directionless and we were experimenting with a few, like trying to find what we wanted to do and everything. But I think without that record, there wouldn't be this record. Because when we kind of convened to do this record, straight away the plan was do a CD, do like 10, 11 tracks, do 45 minutes of music, you know what I mean? And just make it quite traditional and go and be a band, write a record in a rehearsal room together, you know, not just sort of like someone jams something and then we sort of go into a studio and like add a little bit and then that's finished.
And there's the excitement.
And like, well, that's exciting, yeah, definitely. But listen to it now, I'm like, if we'd have played that for 2 weeks, it would now, it would be a better song that we'd released.
Different, right.
And we'll be right back right after this.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Kaiser Chiefs.
The thing is about, I don't want to keep banging on about that record because I don't even know what to call it in America. The thing is, we don't want to be one of those bands that digs their heels on the ground and goes, we're not going to evolve, because if you don't evolve, you won't survive.
Right.
So we wanted to evolve, so we were doing something different. But it took doing something different to make us realise that some of the rules about making records aren't just rules that you have to dig your heels in and live by. They exist for a reason. Like we suddenly were like looking at our favourite records, and they were all between 42 and 45 minutes long, and they all had and even if it was a double album like that, you know, like The Wall, both sides were 42, and we were going, there's a reason for this. There's a reason there's 10 to 12 tracks. It's because it's evolved to be like that, and it's good. And although we don't want to be saying that you can't release music in any other way, we kind of fell back in love with making a record for a record's sake. And even when the songs were getting finished this year, I think all of us kind of, without talking about it, knew their place on the record, like track listing wise. They just kind of fell into position. It started like making sense, and without having to force it. And it was... Because we'd spent the previous 12 months really forcing it, and it was really, you know, it was a tough year, but we both agreed we've never had more of a rewarding year than we'd had writing this record.
It's really interesting that you bring up the science of songwriting too, because it's something about like, you know, how do we get from classical music to jazz to the 3.5 minute pop song?
Yeah.
Because that's what we want to hear with the repeating chorus. So you take that mold, there is a mold and there is a structure and there is parameters, and you have to make it interesting. And you have to work with it.
During that year, we sort of learned a little bit about songwriting in terms of, I think when we were on employment, I think we wrote quite instinctively.
Yeah.
We just like to really know what we were doing.
Sure.
And then when you get, more experienced, whatever, you sort of, as you say, start second guessing yourself and trying to work things out, you know what I mean? But then I think it's important to sort of know some of the rules, but then be able to ignore them, if you know what I mean, because you know them.
Sure.
But then not
take
try
it
and write.
Interesting, right?
not try and just be, do something interesting on, you know, for the sake of it. It's got to have a reason. And but then you want people to listen to it, and you want people to be on the radio, so you've got to sort of pander to that a little bit.
Here's the part about overthinking your radio.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, you also got to think, what do you like? And there's an element of us that when if we went to a festival, we want to see the band who, you know, you could sing along to and jump along to and enjoy in that way. And so many people try and be what they think they want to be and not what they want to be, and in many ways I don't want to sound pretentious, but I think one of the hardest art forms is writing a pop song that can appeal to, you know, 50,000 people in a field all at the same time
without it being bland.
Because that's
usually the tipping point with a lot of pop music, is like, oh, we've made it the big
and
thing.
If you look at some of the best pop music around, from like you Get Lucky to Raw, it's actually really interesting. And you know, I do think Roar is a really interesting song.
I'm not gonna argue that.
Well, it is. It's great.
But so that's you know, we're talking about songwriting, and that was kind of the press release before that. It's like, okay, so you guys had to, you know, you lose your songwriter, the guy who's supposedly the songwriter and everything, and I don't know the ins and outs of that part, but it almost makes it sound like, oh no, we have to learn how to write songs, and because this album, I mean, it is. There's a distinction. It's the Kaiser Chiefs, but it sounds like something different. Uh-huh. So I've gotten right here. It's the first post greatest hits album.
Yeah.
And that happens with a lot of bands. Once you decide, okay, here's our greatest hits, time passes, here's our next record, you get that. It's like, okay, here's a new band, it's the same band, but it's a new band. And you know, what was it? Because if someone else through the years is kind of supplying you, like, okay, here's our batch of songs, was there ever that point where you guys had to look at each other and say, how do we do this together?
I just think that we saw it as a clean slate. I think the greatest hits thing, and also Nick leaving, and all lots of things, lots of timing things that came together, like 10 years together and things like that. I think we saw it as a total clean slate, and we can do what we want. There's a little bit of like, we don't want to just totally shun the Kaiser Chiefs identity entirely, but we wanted to. We were about
as a country band.
We could do what we wanted, so and write what we wanted. And I think what's a few press articles and stuff about Nick writing all the songs and that sort of thing, it just made us sort of fuel the fire. I think he and everybody sort of, we just felt they were underrating what we'd put in the band for 10 years and we set out to prove them all wrong,
clearing it right now.
So it was great, you know what I mean? It's always good to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah.
That's what you're in the band for.
But like, we didn't even really, I mean, apart from Nick, we didn't really want to bring out a greatest hits because we didn't feel it was the right time, but Nick knew he was leaving, so it was a good thing for him, because it was like
clean it up, tie it up,
put a bow on it.
It's a greatest hits, by the way. You guys got some good singles, so this works.
Got some moments.
It's really good. We just didn't really want it to come out at that time, and it was kind of good that it did in the end. But I feel that. It's a very odd thing for them, because it was it's one of those things where, you know, at the time it feels like the worst thing that can happen, but then you look back and go, actually, it was probably the best thing to happen for us, and everyone was doing us a massive favour in making that happen, because it pushed us on to make this thing.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, the new record. Again, education, and more. Is that better?
Yeah, you like it.
No, seriously, guys, thank you so much for jumping in here.
Thank you very much indeed.
We
really enjoyed it.
And we'll see you on the next one.
Great stuff.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith, special Rewind episode. Now we cut to 3 years later. Norman Blake of Teenage Fan Club jumped on the phone with me just as Brexit was breaking to reflect on optimism of aging gracefully in rock and crafting the album here. It was a record about love and contentment in uncertain times. So part two of this special Rewind episode. This is Kyle Meredith with Norman Blake of Teenage Fan Club.
Hey, Kyle, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I've been better.
Oh.
my side lost in the referendum last night, Brexit. So I was a Remain. Yeah. But there you go. I think there are still a few twists and turns before anything actually happens, though, you know. So, we shall see.
I've been watching it, too, and judging from your Twitter feed, I think you and I are on the same level of shocked that this happened at all.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it's to do with David Cameron trying to appease the far right of the Conservative Party in the UK. by thinking that he can, you know, offering the referendum to those people, he would be able to shut them up. Well, it's completely backfired on him, you know. Yeah. But like I say, having said, there's a very interesting article in today's Guardian written by a guy called Joshua Rosenberg, who's their legal correspondent. And it's just, I think it's a very interesting read, because he's basically saying, hang on, this is good, you know, Cameron's going to resign in 3 months, so nothing's going to happen for at least 3 months. But like many of these things, politics is politics, so who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what the leave agreement will be? It may be maybe a very soft agreement, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, we may, you know, there'll be a lot of what we, the agreement that we have with the rest of the EU in terms of travel, etc., mm-hmm. may stay in place. I don't know, but, you know, I think it's, we're not at the end of this whole thing yet. Yeah. A long way to go.
It's scary and it's sad. I mean, this might be the most dreamer thing I say today, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know. It feels like we're in 2016. How is it that we're still in a part? Like, if it were up to me, just to be done with, like, border lines and countries and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
The way the world, you know, the way the internet set us up to be worldwide anyway, it's like, and here it feels like, you know, I mean, we're dealing with it in America, too, where you've got a guy saying, build a wall. And that's what this feels like. Suddenly they're saying, put a wall yeah. around us. Keep everybody out.
And he's a bloody Scotsman, too. But, well, yeah, I agree with you, actually. I think, but here's the thing. I, in a way, it shouldn't be a surprise that the exit polls said that we would be Remain. What you have is a lot of older people here who have voted because of xenophobia and fear of the unknown or mm-hmm. what they are perceived threat from foreigners, you know, stupidly, really. But when they're polled in the opinion polls, they know it's kind of morally repugnant to be xenophobic. So they would have said, oh, yeah, I'm a Romain, because, you know, I like everyone, you know. Mm-hmm. But when it actually comes to when you're in that polling booth and you have privacy, you can write exactly what you think. It is democracy at work, it's, you know. But, you know, like I say, I think it's not over. And I do look at the demographic. There is a lot of older people who have really kind of voted on younger people, the future of younger people. Most of the highest leave vote was in over 65s. Now, you think, what's the best one in the world? You guys aren't going to be around in 25 years.
Right.
But someone who's 18, you know, they've got a long way to go. I like to say, you know, it's politics, so things can change. I'm definitely an optimist when it comes to these kind of things. I think there will be an agreement that will be workable, and who knows, we may be back in there at some point. Probably not in my lifetime, or maybe in my lifetime, I may be old. But I'm an optimist, and I think maybe we need this kind of shock to, you know, wake us all up from, you know.
Right.
The threat from the people on the far right.
I mean, I hope you're right. I hope it does turn around, and hopefully sooner than later. And this coming from, of course, someone who doesn't even live there. But as I said, you know, it's not a complete parallel, but I do see, you know, similar things happening.
Yes, I agree. I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see what the result of the U.S. presidential election is. Although, you know, I think the guy's such a buffoon that surely he's going to completely blow it. I mean, I just can't see that guy in the White House.
Well, I just hope it's not an issue of what, you know, what you were just saying about people saying one thing and then getting in the voting booth and actually doing another. Like, that's what I'm scared of. That's what I'm scared of.
Perhaps, but do you know what? I think there are enough Republicans that don't like that guy who are going to say, do you know what? I normally would like to have a Republican in the White House, but not him, you
right,
know?
Right.
I just think that those people are there. I really do. I just think they're not going to have it. Not him. This isn't what we're about, you know?
Mm. Well,
but, like, so you never know. You never know.
Chris, you've got the right idea by living in Canada and just being a part
of
all of it.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
so.
Yeah. We've just voted in the Liberal Party.
It was funny, though, and I want to tie this back around, because Teenage Fan Club have a new record coming out in September called Here. Congratulations. It is your 10th album. But
yep.
I will say, tying these two together, that while I was learning about the results last night of Brexit,
yeah.
I was listening to the album, and I heard The Darkest Part of the Night was playing while I heard the results. I thought, oh my God, this works so well in such the most wrong way. This works too well.
Yeah, there you go. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, but if we'd had the album a few months earlier, maybe the BBC could have been playing as they were, you know, broadcasting the results.
Like you've been living in a bad dream.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Well, no, I tell you what, it's great for it's been a lot, it's almost 6 years since our last LP, so it's it feels good that we have something eventually releasable, and we're about to start touring again, because we've only really done a few shows here and there. We played at the Merge 25th anniversary down in North Carolina a couple of years ago, and then we've done like one or two other shows, but that's about it. So it's going to be, it's exciting to be able to tour again at last, you know.
Yeah, from where you guys are, and it's, so there was 6 years between this album, and there was 5 years between the records between there. You know, I know that you're a band that's very spread out at this point.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that still brings you guys back together? Because we're talking 30 years, and if you weren't in a band, there's a good chance that you just wouldn't see these people anymore. They would just be people of your past. But you have this thing that brings you back in. Like, what is that thing?
Right. Well, you know, I think we probably we kind of don't see too much of each other, so we see enough of each other. We all still go on well. We're not all friends in the sense that we all hang out all the time, you know. But we are still friends. We're in good. We're on speaking terms. But we're not in each other's pockets all the time. And like you say, I'm over here in Canada. The other guys are in Glasgow. We only ever work when we feel that we have something to say we've not tried to make music for the sake of making music, to make money or whatever. We've always just done what we've wanted to do, and so we've worked at our own pace. And much of that is inertia, you know. It tends to take us a bit of time to get going. That's certainly the case for the last few records. But I think the most important thing with it is that you enjoy working with the musicians that you're working with. That's very important for us anyway as individuals. I don't think we would make music just for the sake of the bank balance.
Right. You know, you talk about only getting together when you have something to say. It's such a nice record because, you know, for whatever darknesses are happening in the world, this is an album seemingly about love and about life.
I think, you know, as you get older, you become a little more philosophical and start to reflect. You know, as you're moving towards retirement, listen to me, geez, I'm 50. But these are just themes that people of our age, I guess, are concerned with. And, relationships, your place in the world, whatever, you know, the future. And hopefully, you know, it's not a pessimistic vision. I think it's, I'm certainly a fairly optimistic person, I think, you know.
The first single is, you know, I'm in love. And I'm thinking, like, you're writing about, or whoever wrote the song, I don't know if it was you or one of the others.
That's one of mine. Yeah,
great song. And I'm thinking, like, all right, so you've written a love song, something that's been done more than anything else in pop music, you know. Like, is it that whole thing?
I was really trying to be sincere. I think very often as a songwriter, well, actually in anything, people are reluctant to share their true feelings. Very often that's the case. There are exceptions. People like someone like Daniel Johnson, I think, he just says everything that he thinks. You know, he has no filter in a way. But most of us, and especially as we get older, I think that we tend towards conservatism with a small c. And are less willing to share our feelings. It seems to me that people are like that. And so with that song, it was just an attempt to say exactly how I felt about another person, you know, just to be sincere and honest. I try to write, but most of my songs are about my relationship with my wife, our future prospects and whatever dreams and struggles, not struggles so much, but, you know, things that we deal with in life, you know, be that paying rent from month to month or whatever, you know. And so I just write to that. I think it's wise to write from something that you know, and that's really all I know in a way. You know, I can relate to my life and how I experience it, and hopefully, I mean, I'm sure people can relate to the songs because, you know, pretty much of most of us have similar kind of lives, if you know what I mean, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you're completely right about that, too, because I'm listening to I'm in Love, and at first it comes off as just this little simple song, and then I find myself just listening and listening and listening, and you know, it makes sense.
Well, yeah, you know, I think there's, the first line and the second verses, there is pain in this world, I can see it in your eyes. So it's about staying with someone, you know, and through all the hard times that happen in life, and, you know, and you know, being in love with someone, having someone that you can share things with is very important, you know. And, you know, like I say, I can only write about what I experience. I can't really write from anyone else's experience, or it's difficult for me to put myself in someone else's position or whatever. So I think for me, I feel most comfortable, and I just want to be kind of honest in what I'm saying as a songwriter.
Yeah. How long have you guys been together now?
Well, so, for just over 20 years.
20 years.
We met when we were making our Grand Prix album. My wife's Canadian. She was working as the housekeeper at the Manor Studios in Oxford in England. She'd been traveling, and I met her there. So wow. Her name's Krista.
At 20 years, and she gets a song this lovely still after all this time.
And you know what? She did the artwork for the album as well. So that's
beautiful. That's the waterfall. Yeah,
These were we found in a thrift store here in Ontario. We found a sort of group of panels that someone had painted. We have no idea who the artist is. I think it's an amateur artist, although they're very beautifully painted. Mm. And we took a detail from that for the sleeve. So we're very happy with that too.
Yeah, it definitely stands out against I don't know what I'm saying. Normal artwork might look like, you know.
I think it's always interesting. If it's a painting, is always interesting. I think, you know, you can. Mm-hmm. There's details. It's kind of, you know, it's a definite image, but it's also kind of abstract as well, with the brush strokes and the colors or whatever, you know. So yeah. I kind of like that about it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on 20 years of marriage.
Oh, thanks.
I was thinking about it because, you know, usually you hear of an artist that, you know, you have the whole one line of thinking that says, oh, you need pain to write a good song. And here you've had something that, you know, 20 years of marriage, and it's one of your best pop songs, you know, yet.
Yeah,
so.
Life and relationships aren't easy. I don't think anyone's relationships, so they have ups and downs, and life isn't easy. It's up and down. And I think I try to reflect that in my songs too, but that one though I'm just trying to talk about that aspect of of being in love with someone, just wholeheartedly and completely or whatever, and yeah. Yes, that's what I was trying to express there. And of course the it had to be called I'm in Love, because it just had to be, you know, that's the chorus lyric or whatever. It just made sense to call it that and not give it an abstract title.
Which of the other songs are yours on this record?
So there's the Darkest Part of the Night. Mm-hmm. It's one of mine. What are the other ones called? I've got the test pressing here, but of course the song titles aren't on there. Terrible, I can't remember the name of my own songs. Let me think. Just give me 1 second. Hang on, what are the other two songs? I'll get there. I've got a copy of the artwork here somewhere.
No, it's okay. That was just more of a curiosity, so it's no big deal if you...
No, sure. I'm sorry to keep you... Wait, I found the cover. Here we go. The LP jacket. Here we go. So, my other songs are Connected to Life, the very last song on the record, and a song called Live in the Moment.
That's my favorite song on the record.
Oh, is it the kind of, it's got more of a kind of bossa nova sort of beat to that song, yeah.
Well, no disrespect to the other guys, but every single song I've name-checked on this record, and only the songs I've name-checked are your songs.
Oh, wait, well, there you go. Well, I'm flattered. That's very kind. Although, you know, I think the great thing about having three of us writing is that, and I think that's kind of helped us remain together for such a long time, because if you think that you have one songwriter in a band who's having to write 10 albums worth of material, it's pretty difficult to maintain a reasonable standard. And I mean, it's hard at the best of times to write a song. Mm-hmm. So I think because there are three of us writing, it's helped us hopefully to maintain a reasonable standard in terms of the quality of the music on the records. I would like to think so. And there's never been pressure on one of us individually to come up with all the material. It certainly is the way that we like to work.
Yeah. Well, it's almost surprising how consistent the album sounds, too, because once you take another band of a similar situation like Sloan or Gomez or any of those who have those different writers, you can usually tell, you know, from song to song that there's a different person behind the board. But there's so much consistency with yours that if you had told me one person wrote this whole album, I would believe you.
Well, you know, yeah, I guess when we set up to record, you know, I guess, you know, it's sort of homogenized by us all playing on each other's songs, but I mean, I guess you could say that for the other bands that you mentioned too. So I'm not sure, maybe it's just the way that we make the records. We tend to record all of the backing tracks at once, you know, do everything, and then we'll overdub vocals after that. So technically the setup is similar for each thing, you know, in the main. So maybe that helps to homogenize the sound a little, probably. I guess also we've been doing it so long that we'll influence each other, and you know, Jerry may play a song and that will kick off an idea for me or Raymond or whatever, and vice versa.
Yeah. Well, it's made for a beautiful album. I want to congratulate you. 10 albums in 30 years.
Oh, I know. It's amazing, isn't it? I know. I think something like 5 in the first 5, and then one every few after that.
You know, as long as you keep making music, you can take as much time as you want to between, you know.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, definitely. It's great for us to have the record coming out. It's what we do. It's what we've been doing for years. And so it just feels natural to be moving into a phase of touring or whatever. That's going to be really great.
Yeah. You know, for what it's worth, I just the other day, a few days ago, talked to Frank Reeder. From
I know Frank well.
Yeah, and there's another band, you know, they took their time between releases, quite a bit more time than you did, and it ends up, I think, their greatest album of their entire career. So,
yeah. You're absolutely, and do you know what? They're spread further apart than we are. Frank's out in the West Coast,
uh-huh.
isn't he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, you know, I've only got the Atlantic to cross. Frank's got the continent of North America and the Atlantic to cross, so to get together with his guys. So,
so if it just takes a little bit more time to make the best music you can, then, you know, have at it.
Well, do you know what? Once it's released, there's nothing you can do about it. So you may as well make sure you get it. You're as happy as you can be with it before you release it.
That's true. That's very true. Well, thank you for continuing to make the music. And again, I love this album here, and it officially gets released in September. And hopefully, there'll be lots and lots of tour dates on this side of the pond as well, so we can all see you over here.
That would be great. There'll be no jet lag for me, of course, if we tour in North America, which I'm pretty excited about.
It's the little things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Norman. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you very much.
All right, I'll see you around.
Okay, take it easy. Bye now.
There you go. Thanks to Norman from Teenage Fan Club. Thanks to Ricky and Simon from Kaiser Chiefs. And thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here to keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Of course, after that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where you'll find me Monday through Friday, starting 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Dave Matthews, Margaret Glaspy, Talking Heads, Beck, The Super Suckers, Nine Inch Nails, Jimmy Eat World, Sheryl Crow, Houses, Alpha Mist, Lucius, James Vincent McMorrow, Jensen McRae, The Breeders, Nation of Language, and my interviews with Weird Al Yankovic, Ed Robertson from Bare Naked Ladies, and They Might Be Giants. Just an example of what you can hear when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition of Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.